This is episode 185 of the Prepper Website Podcast, where I connect you with resources that will help you live a more self-reliant life. Today's articles are Catch a Fish, Basic Survival Fishing, and Consequences of a Nuclear Attack. Hey, I'm Todd Sepulveda, the editor of PrepperWebsite.com. This podcast is an audible version with some commentary of articles that have been posted on Prepper Website, a daily curation of preparedness information. These articles are some of the best that have been recently posted on PrepperWebsite.com. All article links and show information can be found on the PrepperWebsitePodcast.com. Hey, didn't get to do a lot of follow-up on news today, and to be honest with you, I started the podcast and I was talking about this idiot who murdered all these people in Sutherland Springs, Texas, and was going to say his name, and I just, you know what, I just stopped and just started over. I don't even want to give that guy any kind of name recognition. He's just an idiot. And from what I have seen, I haven't done a lot of in-depth reading, but he was just a bad guy. I mean, he was just a bad guy all the way around. And so, you know, just there's evil people in the world, and that's you know, I don't usually, if you're listening to the Prepper Website Podcast, you totally understand that. You might be new. Welcome to the podcast. You know, I hope you get everything you need from this, and hope you are, maybe your eyes are being open, and maybe you're even coming to the podcast because of, you know, some of the things that you're seeing on the news and this idiot who killed all these people in First Baptist Sutherland Springs, Texas, at the church at First Baptist Church at Sutherland Springs, Texas, and you're like, hey, what's going on? But the world's crazy, and that's one reason why we prep, because you never know. I mean, we prep for natural disasters. You know, a lot of the times the big sexy articles are the EMPs and the big things out there. But every day, every single day when we leave our house, you're not guaranteed, you know, that you're going to be coming back home. And so one thing that you can do is to be smart and to, you know, live a life where you are aware of what's going on. So don't want to give this guy any name recognition. He's just a bad guy. But, you know, another reason why we need to make sure that we are keeping our eyes open while we're out there. Hey, yesterday I talked a little bit, just very briefly, I touched on issues with Saudi Arabia. And one of the reasons why I bring that up is, you know, there is this idea when you talk about Bible prophecy. And when you listen to this podcast on Tuesday, for those of you that aren't aware of it, I record the podcast, so the Tuesday podcast gets recorded on Monday night. I will be releasing the prophecy update where I've linked to a whole bunch of different ministers who do prophecy updates, like on the weekend and in the last couple of days, and upload that. And to me, that's very interesting. I think something that we should really be taking into consideration if you are a believer, if you are a Christian. A lot of churches don't talk about Bible prophecy and things like that. But there are some people in Bible prophecy that think that Saudi Arabia is Babylon that you read in Revelation, or the daughter of Babylon. And so some people believe the United States is that. Some people believe like Saudi Arabia is that. So anytime Saudi Arabia and things in the news are talking about going to war and different things like that, you know, what's going on with Iran and their words that they're having with Iran back and forth. And then the crown prince is like, he's like cleaning up shop. I mean, I don't know if he's really doing it. Maybe he's doing it to kind of send a message. Who knows? You know, I think John Haller kind of alluded to that maybe. You know, that all those, you know, different kind of craziness is going on over there in Saudi Arabia. So that kind of just piques my interest over there. Anything that kind of goes over there, that goes on over there, something like that starts to pique my interest. So that's kind of why I brought it up. But you might want to keep your eye out for Saudi Arabia and, you know, what's going on over there. You know, Saudi Arabia is, I don't know why they are one of our allies. Although, you know, some of the 9/11 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia. A lot of people don't realize this, though, that when 9/11 did happen, all airplanes were you know, all traffic, all air traffic was grounded, except for the prince, Saudi Arabia's prince or whatever. He was allowed to fly around, and he had special permission from the Bush presidency. That's another fiasco there. Don't even get me started on politics and the Republicans and how things have recently come out. I mean, I don't know if you saw that. Maybe that, both George Bushes voted for Hillary Clinton. And that just goes to show you that these guys are all they're interested in is power and keeping the same people in power. There's no reason why we should not be able to have a bunch of decent changes right now in Washington. But, nothing's going on. Nothing's happening because all those guys are stalling and they just want to keep the status quo. They just want to wait out Trump, let him leave, and let the next person come in, whoever that might be, and continue business as usual. So very, very, you can get very negative on the whole thing. Maybe you're hearing that in my voice a little bit because, people were so excited. Like, hey, we got a Republican president. We got majorities. We're good to go. And then, no, everything that tries to get done is stalled out. And that's just, I'm sorry, it's just absolute crap. And so, whatever. I mean, I don't put too much faith in politics anymore. I kind of gave up on that a while back. I think that anything that any politics that can be worthwhile that you should be involved in are local politics. The best decisions are usually made at the most local level, and I think those are the best that you can do. I think when you start getting into the real high state, and then even Governor Abbott here in Texas has done some things and said some things that are pretty cool. A lot of people agree with. But when you get up to that federal level, I mean, come on, it just seems like it doesn't matter who you are. You get up there and it just, things just, I'm going to stop talking about that. I'm going to go ahead and start reading the articles that I have. I haven't done one on fishing that I can remember on the podcast in a while. And to be honest with you, I don't like fishing at all. I've never had really great experiences with fishing, and I always joke around with people that when they talk about wanting to go fishing, I'm like, man, if I want to go fishing, I'll go to Long John Silver's and go get some fried fish or something like that. I just don't do fishing. I had an uncle who passed away very tragically when I was young. I probably was about 6 or 7 years old. And he was an outdoorsman. He had a boat. He would go deep sea fishing. He would go hunting and all those kinds of things. And no doubt that if he was alive when I was growing up and when I was in my teenage years or even younger than that, that he would have been taking me fishing out there, deep sea fishing and with his friends. But anyway, so maybe I would have had a different outlook on fishing. I know my son loves to fish. And so, but anyway, I think when we're talking about survival and we're talking about preparedness, this is one of those things where you can have some supplies ready. And I think that this article touches on those. So this is a basic survival fishing. So let's go ahead and get started on that. Much energy is expended on this blog and elsewhere in the preparedness community on food production, whether domestically raised, hunted, or grown. Less so on fish, an excellent source of protein, which populates the planet's water, which comprises about 71% of the Earth's surface area. Aside from the familiar arguments from some quarters that fish don't taste good, while others claim it is delicious, it is an undeniable source of protein. In fact, some experts put fish at the single best protein source in the world. It's not just that fish is a complete protein and has some amazing benefits, but the healthy fat in fish, omega-3, is something that you just won't find in land-dwelling creatures. Among the benefits of eating fish is improved insulin sensitivity. The increased insulin sensitivity means that you need less insulin to transport glucose and amino acids into your cells. Less insulin may mean less fat deposition. Fatty fish like salmon, tuna, and mackerel should be a primary food protein. They have a great amino acid profile and confer health benefits related to both the protein itself and the omega-3 fatty acids that you just can't find in other proteins. But what about situations where you don't have a choice of what your protein sources are or are otherwise lacking for options like survival? So basic tackle for fish. Sources of information about catching fish are everywhere and methods all have their proponents. For the purpose of this article, I focus on hook and line methods, bypassing harpoons, traps, poisons, and dynamite sticks, all of which will do the job. However, of greater interest is something that can be light, portable, and easily deployed. Distilled into its most basic form, fishing involves a hook and a line. All else is an elaboration on a theme. The right combination of hook and line can be used to secure fish. A rule of thumb is that a person can catch a small fish on a small hook and a big fish on a big hook or a small hook, but you can't catch a small fish on a big hook. Small hooks. With this in mind, the best place to start is with a small hook, or rather a bunch of small hooks, as you may well want to be deploying multiple hooks at any given time. In my experience, fishing around the world in fish and salt water, small can mean really small, like size 8 or 10. If a person is only buying a packet of one size and color, I would recommend a light wire gold Aberdeen hook in size 10. However, assortment packs are available in big box stores and online. Why gold? Often fish can be coaxed into hitting a bald hook if it is in gold color. Sure helps to tip it with a piece of bait though. Big hooks. They vary in size depending on species and whether you are found in fresh and or salt water and can range from about size 2 through 16 and even bigger. Commonly, for a survival situation, something in the size of 1 to 4 range will be used. For more information about hooks, you can check out Cabela's Fish Hook Buyer's Guide. Line for small hooks can be 6 to 10 pounds monofilament and can be bought in 50 to 100 yard spools for less than a dollar at the big box stores. Select the clear or green color rather than high visibility or colored lines. Maxima Green Leader material comes in 30 yard spools, is a little more expensive, and would be an excellent choice here, not only for a low visibility but also for abrasion resistance. Line for big hooks, depending on application, can range from 20 pounds test and up through and including rope. For baiting wary fish, trout, small mackerel, go lighter. For the less wary, such as catfish on a trot line, even cordage works fine so long as it's made of some form of plastic versus cotton. A basic selection of hooks and lines can fit into a container the size of an Altoids box. Fishing rods and reels are nice, but in a survival situation may in fact be less productive than tying a series of baited hooks often to tree limbs overhanging the water. And if you are on the move, they weigh something. If you are gadget-oriented, you can increase your chances using spring-set yo-yo reels available via mail order or speed hooks such as are used by the military in survival kits. You know, not too long ago, well, it's been probably a long time ago. I say not too long ago, and then I go back and I start looking, and it was like, you know, 3-4 years ago. I remember doing a couple of videos on the yo-yo reels, videos from YouTube on the yo-yo reels on the Prepper website. And so if I can find the links to those, I'll go ahead and include those in the show notes so you can check those out if you've never seen those before or you know you'd like to see them in action. It was pretty cool. All right, going on to baits and lures. The best bait is what you can find in the immediate vicinity of where you are fishing. Look under rocks, logs, or in quiet pools, or even use insects such as grasshoppers or crickets. Insects in fresh water, at least, if it's alive, it will probably catch a fish. Another maxim is you can catch a big fish with a little fish, so using this small-large approach, you can use a small hook setup to catch a small fish and then hook the small fish onto a larger hook setup to catch a bigger fish. That's why you should carry an assortment of hooks of various sizes. Large hooks for large fish and small hooks for small fish. Lures can be effective, but one must work or manipulate them to cause a fish to strike. This decreases your ability to scale your energies because with lures you can only work one line at a time. That said, plastic lures work, especially if they resemble food. Lots of lures look nothing like food and cause fish to strike in reaction. And bucktail jigs, ranging from tiny to large, will catch fish. In freshwater, crappie marabou jigs and shad darts are exceptionally productive. And in saltwater, bucktail jigs with cadmium-plated hooks should be part of every fishing kit. Miscellaneous equipment. There's a couple of bucktail jigs pictures there that you can click on and you can view. The pictures are not live. I guess it's going to Amazon and you can go see those there. Miscellaneous equipment. It's a knife to cut bait and clean fish, needle nose pliers to remove hooks from fish, a towel to hold the fish while removing hooks or cleaning them, balloons. The small ones you can get a bag full for a dollar, makes great floats, strike indicators, and if the wind is right, they can transport the baited hook out into a fishy area. Keep it simple. So I don't think I said the name of the website when I first started reading the article. I think I jumped right into it. You see how all that politic talk gets me going? I just forget stuff. ModernSurvivalBlog.com. Again, ModernSurvivalBlog.com. And, you know, there's a big community over there, so there's 92 comments in the comment section. And you know, when you have a lot of comments like that, you just learn a lot. And so I'm going to invite you to come over to modernsurvivalblog.com and go check that out, because it just looks like there's a lot of good information here just from scanning the comment section. So again, modernsurvivalblog.com, and there's some links in the, also the comments. You want to go check that out, fishing. And then if you see in the show notes that I linked to that yo-yo video, you can go check that one out. All right. So our next article comes to us from PrepperBits.com, and this article is consequences of a nuclear attack. You know, just something that I know that we have recently talked about it, or, you know, nuclear has come up, and it comes up in, well, just yesterday, you know, we, from the article from Survivalpedia, we were reading that the author grew up in the 60s during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And, you know, a lot of people probably had more information about what would constitute or what would happen in if a nuclear attack hit. You know, I don't know. We might have more specific information now. But what I'm trying to say is more people were more aware of the possibilities of that happening because of the Cuban Missile Crisis. And of course, you know, they would sound the alarm, they would have drills, and people would get underneath their desk, and that really wouldn't provide any kind of shelter whatsoever. But they did that, and so people have a little bit of information from that. Nowadays, that's been so far removed from our psyche, from our thinking, that not too many people know what would happen in a nuclear attack, or what would, you know, a lot of people in the preparedness community are very familiar with it because they do read articles and listen to articles and watch videos and those kinds of things. But a lot of people aren't. And so I think this is very valuable. When he was talking about that, or when I was actually reading this article, I was thinking back about, what we did yesterday on the podcast, reading that about the Cuban Missile Crisis. And I didn't grow up, I mean, I wasn't even born at that time, so I grew up a little bit later than that. And this wasn't part of what we discussed when we were in school, or, you know, knowledge growing up. So I think it's a worthy topic to discuss, especially with all the saber rattling that we hear and everyone wanting to go nuclear, North Korea and then Iran. I was listening to the prophecy update where Benjamin Netanyahu was being interviewed, and he said, "We will not allow Iran to acquire even one nuclear bomb." That's a pretty serious thing. And he was saying, you know, if we threaten that, then we really truly mean that. We will back that up with action if we have to. And so, there's just the threat of nuclear wars is just a lot higher than it was 10 years ago. And so I think that when we can read about this kind of information in articles, I think it's valuable. So let's go ahead and start reading. Again, PrepperBits.com, Consequences of a Nuclear Attack. In recent months, tensions surrounding the likelihood of a nuclear attack have increased. During his visit to South Korea on Saturday, U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said that the threat of nuclear missile attack by North Korea is accelerating. The thought of a nuclear attack anywhere in the world is a scary one, not to mention where we live. Whilst we all hope that such an attack will never become a reality, we should be aware of the consequences. So what is a nuclear attack? A nuclear attack involves a device such as a nuclear warhead that creates a nuclear explosion on impact. When first thinking about how a nuclear attack could occur, we often think of military missiles like North Korea's Hwasong-14 missile. However, a nuclear attack could also be caused by an improvised nuclear device. These are crude nuclear devices that are made from components of stolen weapons. They can also be made from scratch using a nuclear material such as plutonium or highly enriched uranium. What is a nuclear explosion? Nuclear explosions are caused by uncontrolled chain reactions that produce intense waves of heat, light, air pressure, and radiation. When a nuclear missile impacts with the ground, the explosion creates radioactive particles. These particles get drawn up into a mushroom cloud that also contains dust and debris. The cloud produces nuclear fallout that can travel great distances and expose many people to radiation. A nuclear explosion creates a fireball that can reach temperatures of tens of millions of degrees and create a shockwave that can cause a significant damage to structures and cause fatalities and injuries. Radioactive material from the nuclear device mixes with the vaporized material in the mushroom cloud. Nuclear fallout occurs when the vaporized radioactive material in the mushroom cloud cools. It condenses to form a solid particle that falls back to the earth. The nuclear fallout can travel long distances with wind currents and can contaminate food and water supplies and surface miles from the explosion site. Initial nuclear explosion consequences. The size of the area of a nuclear blast can impact upon will depend on the yield of the nuclear device used. It will also depend on the type of building structures at the explosion site, the altitude of the explosion, and the weather. The shockwave created by the blast will also depend on the yield of the nuclear device. Radioactive fallout from the blast spreads in an irregular oval-shaped pattern in the direction the wind is blowing. Although the most dangerous fallout would happen within minutes at the explosion site, depending on the weather, the fallout could potentially carry lethal radiation doses hundreds of miles away. However, the concentration of radiation levels would decrease the further the fallout travels. Hey, one of the things, I don't know if you've ever seen it before, but there is a map. Someone created a nuke map a while back. And see, the guy's name was on here. Alex Wellerstein. And I've actually linked to it on Prepper website multiple times. But it basically uses Google Maps. And so it is a nuclear missile map. So you can go ahead and put in a bunch of information, right? You can put in where you, so it's Google Maps. You can put in your location where you're at. And then you can start putting in like yields, and you can look at basic effects, height of the burst, casualties, radioactive fallout, all that kind of stuff. And then you can go ahead and detonate it, and the different sizes of bombs and all that kind of stuff, and see where your city is and where you are. If you are in a prime location, like for instance, living in Houston, the city of Houston might not get bombed, but one thing that they always say is that the port of Houston would get bombed. I think it's like maybe the second biggest port in the United States. And so, we have all the refineries down in Pasadena and Baytown and Beaumont, and so those would be bombed. And, using one of the biggest bombs that you could possibly use, would that blast affect us where I'm at, in Northwest Houston? Would radiation hit us, those kinds of things? And so I decided to go look it up because I knew I was going to do this article. And I looked it up, and I'm going to link to it in the show notes. So if you're interested in going and playing around with some of those values there, it can be kind of scary. But like I said, it's like a Google map, so you can zoom in, zoom out. find your location, and then go ahead and plug everything in and see what would happen. All right, continuing on, secondary nuclear explosion consequences. Intense heat from a nuclear explosion would produce fires throughout the immediate blast zone. The nuclear blast would damage buildings and cause power and phone line outages. In addition to this, infrastructures like gas, water, roads, bridges, and tunnels would be damaged. The detonation of a nuclear blast can also produce an electromagnetic pulse that interferes with electronic equipment. Electromagnetic pulse. A nuclear blast can create ionization of the atmosphere, which creates an electromagnetic pulse. These pulses can send an electric current through underground electrical cables, which result in damage to electrical systems. EMPs can cause widespread disruption to electronic equipment and networks. What consequences could a nuclear attack have? Initial nuclear radiation and radioactive fallout that settles after the blast can cause considerable death, injuries, and damages to infrastructure. An electromagnetic pulse from the explosion could also disrupt telecommunications and power distribution. The number of injuries and fatalities that can result from a nuclear attack will depend on many factors. For example, the yield of the nuclear device, population near the blast site, the path fallout travels, and weather conditions. Even a partial nuclear detonation could produce many casualties in densely populated areas. Although the distribution varies depending on the type of nuclear weapon and the altitude of the explosion, a nuclear explosion releases energy made up of roughly 50% shockwave, 35% heat, 5% initial nuclear radiation, and 10% fallout. During the first hour after a nuclear explosion, the radioactivity levels will start to drop steeply. Radiation levels will decrease further by around 90% after a further 7 hours. It then drops to around 99% after 2 days have passed. And so that's one reason why, just a little side note, that's one reason why they talk about sheltering in place and having the supplies to be able to shelter in place, and making sure that you turn off your AC and make sure that you're able to, you know, stay inside for 2 or 3 days to make sure that all the radiation, I mean, that's if you survive all the blasts and all the other junk, that all the radiation can go ahead and fall from the atmosphere down to the ground. And even after that, you know, you need to be a little careful there. And I believe we have done articles on that on the podcast, so you can go back and find that at PrepperWebsitePodcast.com. You can go, if you search for nuclear, you'll be able to find that, or even radiation. All right, continuing on, what is the risk to health from a nuclear attack? The pressure of the shockwave will cause flying debris, falling buildings and bodies being thrown, and will result in many casualties. Anyone who survives the effects of the shockwave would most likely suffer adverse health effects from the radiation. The possible health effects of radiation depends on the following factors: the type of radiation, the length of time exposed, and the dose of radiation absorbed by the body. Radiation doses are calculated in units called rads and relate to the route of exposure absorbed by the body, inhaled or ingested. The short-term effects on health. The initial fireball and thermal energy from a nuclear blast can cause severe burns to the skin and eyes of survivors. If exposed to radiation levels of between 50 to 100 rad, survivors may develop symptoms of acute radiation syndrome, or ARS. ARS symptoms can include nausea, diarrhea, vomiting, and reduced blood cell count. Radiation, especially beta radiation, can cause skin burns and localized injury. Death begins to occur once the dose of radiation exposure reaches 125 rad. Once exposed to a dose of between 300 to 400 rad, around half of those exposed will die without treatment. Radiation doses that are higher than 1,000 rad can cause people to die within hours or days. This is because the radiation attacks the central nervous system and inhibits stem cell growth. Radiation can also result in damage to the gastrointestinal lining and to bone marrow, where stem cell growth is crucial. Fetuses are more sensitive, and the radiation effects on a fetus may include growth retardation, malformations, and impaired brain functions. The long-term effects on health. After the initial effects of radiation have passed, exposure to radiation can still cause long-term health issues. Ionizing radiation is carcinogenic and increases the risk of developing cancer later in life. The increased risk of cancer would be proportional to the amount of radiation dose exposure. A decade or more can pass before radiation-related malignancies appear. Survivors of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki atomic bombs have a 10% increased risk of developing cancer over normal rates, some occurring more than 50 years following first exposure. Other long-term health effects resulting from exposure to nuclear radiation can include blood disorders, cataracts, hair loss, and keloids. Consequences of a nuclear attack summary. The information above talks about what could happen as a result of a nuclear attack. We also recently published in an article that talks about the practical steps to reduce nuclear attack radiation exposure. So there you go. I can't remember if that article and I forgot that it was at the bottom here. I can't remember if that article takes care of everything that I was mentioning as far as sheltering in place and everything like that. I guess I can do a quick scan of that and let you know. But we'll see here. Yeah, I mean, there's some of it there. It's not very detailed, but you can get a little bit there. So linking to this article, you'll get that. Let me finish off this sentence. It says, you can continue your research by reviewing the research credits and recommended reading links below. And so, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 8 links that you can go check out. I like that Prepper Bits does provide those extra links for you to do a little bit more research for yourself. You can also go to the Tag Cloud over on PrepperWebsite.com. Go to the right-hand corner and type in Prepper Topics or Research a Topic, and it'll take you to the Tag Cloud. And so you know that every article that has ever been posted on Prepper Website is linked there and in the Tag Cloud. And so you know that you're not typing into Google or some search engine. These are all like prepper-related, self-reliant, self-sufficient, survival-type articles that you can go check out. But anyway, good information over here at PrepperBits.com to help us, kind of think a little bit about all the craziness that's out there and, what would you do? And so, again, that's one of those what-ifs. I know it's the big one. We talk about nuclear war. If nuclear war happens, if we're having to go into this, to this line of thought here and we're having to move into this this scenario, then things have gotten really, really bad. And you should have some serious supplies there. So hopefully, it gets you to thinking there a little bit and what you would do if you were in this scenario. Maybe you start to look into, do you live in an area where it would be targeted? Maybe you live out in the country and you feel like you're good, but if you live in a major city, does your major city, does it provide some kind of strategic value for the United States to where if a government was going to hurt the United States, would they target your city because it's valuable in one way or the other? So a lot to think about there. That's over at PrepperBits.com. Like I've said, actually said that a couple of different times already. So go to and also make sure that you check out that nuke map. That nuke map is really cool to be able to just mess around with and try out. So, hey, that's it for the podcast for episode 185. If you get a chance and you have any comments or feedbacks, come over to episode 185. Over at theprepperwebsitepodcast.com, leave me a comment, or you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Always love to hear from you and hear from readers out there. And so with that, choose to live a more self-reliant life. Choose not to be so dependent on the government grid or the grind. Until tomorrow, stay prepped and aware. Peace.